All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Friday, May 13th, 2022. It is Friday the 13th. If you are the superstitious type, be careful out there today. Thanks for tuning into the stream. My name's Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. If this is your first time watching DFS Office Hours, welcome. This is a live Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS, whatever you guys want to talk about. Your questions drive the conversation we have here on this show. If you have questions you'd like me to answer, you can email us, support@sabersim.com. If you're watching me live here, you can fire away your questions into YouTube chat. And whether you're watching me live or listening to the recording, you can ask questions in the Office Hours channel in Slack. The Office Hours channel is the best place to ask questions. That is almost always where I start with the questions for that day. There's a link to join Slack in the description of every past show. So if you haven't already joined our Slack community, first of all, get joined up there. We have free prop bets that we post every single day for baseball and basketball. We have sim alert channels that will tell you when new sims run for games. Very useful if you're using SaberSim to build your lineups. There's a great community overall in our Slack channel. Good conversations going on every single day in the sport channels. And of course, the trusty Office Hours channel there as well. If you are by chance listening to this as a recording, there is a timestamp list of everything we talk about here on this episode in the description as well. If you want to bounce around, if I am putting you to sleep talking about baseball strategy and you just can't wait until I talk about NBA Showdown, for example, bounce around. I totally get it. So we've got some cool questions in our queue for today. A couple questions about MMA with another card coming up here tomorrow about duplication and setting groups in MMA. So we'll talk about that. I saw a question as well about setting exposures, particularly about the kind of the balancing act between being very granular and specific with your exposures and then also how that affects when you start playing fewer number of entries, right? The difference between the granularity of your exposures when you're playing maybe 150 lineups versus, three lineups or five lineups or 20 lineups or something like that. So that looks like that is what is in front of us here to start the show at least. But as always, again, feel free to fire away at me and we'll keep it going. We've got a good day of DFS in front of us here today. 13 game MLB main slate. Big one. These Friday slates can be pretty fun with a lot of the games here. Let me know in chat or in the comments what your favorite size slate is for MLB main slates. I know I don't think there's a consensus about this. I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there that maybe like those medium size slates somewhere in the middle. You can get play a little bit more of a game theory angle on some of those smaller slates, but those big slates are pretty fun too, where you have a lot of options to branch out. I like these big slates. I think the bigger the slate, the better for baseball in particular, I think, but can be a little bit tougher to build fewer lineups here on these big slates. I always feel like 20 doesn't really feel like enough. Even 150, if you've played 150 lineups for a while, you know that 150 is definitely not always enough, at least to feel like you're kind of getting everywhere you want to go. But let me know what your favorite size slates are for the baseball slates here. But anyway, let's go ahead and get into it. I'm also realizing now, 13 game main slate on Friday the 13th, really amping up the superstitious vibe here on stream today. But hopefully we have good luck on this slate here and not bad luck. But anyway, let's go ahead and get into it. I see a few other people joining into the live stream now. So welcome everybody. Happy Friday. Let's go ahead and start answering some questions. But actually we are going to go away from the spooky 13 game main slate on Friday the 13th here and start with a couple questions about MMA here. And this is a good one from Neil. And he said, I think I'm going to jump into the MMA streets for the first time this weekend. Any strategies you suggest for avoiding duplication? MMA seems very similar to Showdown in that avoiding dupes is the name of the game. I've heard lowering min salary and max salary, making sure you have at least one fighter under 20% owned, et cetera. Anything else to consider? Yeah, so we'll start this, I think, with, you know, maybe more of some heuristics that I think can be useful here. Then talk a little bit more about maybe some additional strategies, some more advanced strategies to thinking about duplication in MMA. And then I want to chat a little bit just about unique theory, I guess, duplication theory here a little bit on the MMA side. But let's start here. So first of all, we do have, when you pull up the sliders and you start building lineups for an MMA slate here on SaberSim, you will see that by default, there is a little bit of ownership fade here. That ownership fade is going to help avoid some duplication for you automatically, right? That's going to, it's not set to a very high value. It's set to 2 by default, but it's non-zero. And what that means basically is that when the builder is building these lineups, we're going to basically sim the card, right? Almost always, I think by default, except for maybe at the single entry stuff. But if you're playing like multiple entries, pretty much any multi-entry stuff, this sim variance is going to be at 10, which is basically taking a single card simulation, right? And it's setting the projections to what these fighters scored in their own single simulations of the fight. The ownership fade slider is basically going to say, you know, we want to consider ownership a little bit here, right? We don't necessarily just want the pure optimal that could have been played for that card. If there's two guys that maybe both scored very close together, maybe give us the one here that had the little bit of a lower overall total ownership. Keep in mind that these ownership projections for SaberSim at the moment are based heavily off of our own projections. So I do think in the interest of avoiding duplication, one thing that you can spend a little bit of time on is just studying these ownership projections and make sure they're kind of in line with the way that you think the ownership's going to fall on the slate. If you are new to MMA, I do think one very basic kind of set of rules that you can look at there, and this is just purely from what Will told me the last time he was on stream, but the main events typically end up coming in a little higher owned than our ownership projections would indicate. A lot of times female fighters come in a little bit lower owned than we would expect. And I think from what I've been seeing anecdotally is that if you have a heavyweight fight on the card, a lot of times those heavyweight fighters do also end up getting a little bit higher owned. Our ownership projections at the moment won't always pick up on some of those field trends as well. But adding a little bit of a value there, just being directionally correct, adjusting the ownership projections even by like 10 or 20% in the direction that you think it's going to go will help make that ownership fade slider be a little bit more consistent. I do think you can justify dropping the max salary a little bit here as well, but I don't think it works as well here in this particular sport, just because MMA is such a binary sport where you have, you know, all of the positive outcomes for a fighter are going to be when they win the fight, and particularly if they win the fight inside the distance. All of the negative outcomes for a fighter are going to be when they lose. I think actual scores probably don't correlate as well to fighter salary as they do in a sport like even NFL Showdown, but especially something like NBA Showdown. All of this is to say is that I don't know if... Also, I guess the one other component here is that because there are fewer fighters in the pool, right? There are less lineups that can be possibly made at the 50,000 salary cap and the 49.9 salary cap. I'm not sure if there is a disproportionate number of lineups being made at those high salary bands compared to how often those lineups win, like there is in other sports, right? The whole point of using that max salary cap in other sports is basically that, you know, people building by hands and traditional optimizers are going to overwhelmingly build lineups that are built right up against that salary cap. And I just think because of the way that MMA scoring works and because of the constraints of what fighters are available in the pool, I'm not sure if that's still as much the case. I think it probably can't hurt you, but I don't know if it's as reliable as a way to avoid duplication here in MMA in particular. So let's build some lineups and we'll talk about a couple other things. But I still don't hate that idea. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. I do think some of these other heuristics are going to help you, right? Making sure you have a fighter under 20% owned, overall putting, you know, maybe at least 2-3 underdogs in your lineup is going to help a lot as well in terms of making sure that your lineups are not duplicated. I think my favorite way to actually avoid dupes in MMA with SaberSim is actually a little bit outside of the app. It will require you to do a little bit of maybe some Excel work on your own. So if you want to go down this route, ownership product works pretty well in MMA because fighters, apart from opposing fighters, are basically going to be pretty uncorrelated to one another, right? And what particularly what I'm trying to say here is that the field's usage of one fighter in a lineup is not going to be very related to somebody's usage of putting another fighter in that same lineup. And what that means is that these ownership projections can kind of actually be thought of as true probabilities of independent events. It's not perfect, but it's a pretty good approximation, right? So if we say 46.2% Davy Grant, right, we're actually kind of basically saying that there is, in a large field GPP, a 46.2% probability that any lineup has Davy Grant. And if Manuel Torres has a 43.4% ownership projection, right, we can actually multiply these two numbers together and say that the probability of any lineup having both of those two fighters in it is the product of those two numbers, right? Now, this isn't my idea, of course, right? Ownership products are pretty popular as a way of calculating how likely a lineup is to be in any given contest in a lot of different sports. But the problem with that approach for something like NFL Showdown or something like that is that the players are not very independent, right? They are correlated. If you have a game where Tom Brady, the Bucks are playing the Chiefs, right? And somebody's using Tom Brady at a captain spot. Well, the percent chance that the Chiefs defense is also in that lineup is actually probably lower than its raw ownership projection indicates because people are less likely to pair those two players together. That doesn't really happen as much in MMA, right? Because these fighters are independent. So I think probably one of my favorite ways and one of the best ways to actually do kind of a deeper analysis on duplication in MMA, and it does require a little Excel work, I'm gonna say that again, is to pull down your lineups, right? And to take the product of the ownership of each fighter in your lineup, right? And what you would basically need to do is you would need to look up the ID, the fighter ID from your lineup file and compare it to the projections that you download on step one. But you can actually calculate out the ownership product of every single lineup, multiply that by the size of your contest. And I think that actually works as a pretty decent duplication model for MMA. It's not as sophisticated as you can get there, but I do think that works pretty well. We are planning in the future on adding a few things here. One is ownership product directly to the app. And I think also along with that, if Will or anybody else from the SaberSim team is listening in, I think we're planning on also adding a few more robust calculations to the way that you can study ownership in the app, things that are a little bit more sophisticated than either product or ownership sum. So that is coming. We also want to add the ability to give you a little bit more information when you download your lineups file. So you don't need to like recalculate things that are already calculated in the app. But that is probably my favorite way of calculating of assessing duplication in MMA. Now, with that said, right, I don't think it's realistic or even the best use of everybody's time to go that deep into it. So if you want some kind of other general rules of thumb or ways that I think you can kind of avoid some duplication, I do think it is a great idea to study the ownership projections a little bit. Did I go out? Guy Will Gamble said they cut my stream before I gave the goods. Did I cut out? I hope not. Oh, okay. Guy Will Gamble said that was just a blip for me. Good. Man, I don't know if I could repeat all that as eloquently as I just did. I'm glad. I hope I didn't lose that there. Anyway, what I was saying, if you want some kind of general heuristics of some other ways to get some value out of this within the app, right? I think, you know, making sure that you've got a low on fighter in different lineups. I do think adding value to your ownership projections and just allowing that ownership fade slider to work a little bit here, I think that's fine too. I also think, you know, just spreading out your exposure to some of the higher projected owned fighters, right? That's naturally going to push you onto more of those dogs. That's going to push you onto lineups that are naturally going to be a little lower owned and therefore probably a little less duplicated in your pool. I think there's probably still a lot of plus EV lineups at the top of your pool, even in a pool size of like 500 here that you can float in between. And just being on the other side of some of the more popular fights, I think could be a good way to avoid duplication here. But it would be remiss for me to not at least talk a little bit about ownership product, even though it's something that requires you to go outside of the app a little bit, just because I think in these sports where you have these different players that are basically completely uncorrelated, completely independent, it works so well. I also think NASCAR, even though duplication is probably a little bit of a smaller issue there, just because you're talking about, you know, 40, 35 sometimes racers there. Golf has big fields, but I think duplication can be a little bit of a problem there. These sports where you have these independent ownership projections just can be super useful. It's my favorite way to do it. And it is something that we want to incorporate more into the app, a better way of dealing with duplication in the sports that need that. So I feel like there was something else that I wanted to touch on there, but I lost my train of thought there. Maybe that's it. I think that can be a really, oh, actually, I do remember here now. So this is going to be my last little note here, about this. And I think this is kind of getting a little more theory wise, but, I think there is an interesting, so I know I have, attacked duplication here, a lot on this stream. I have a video up on our YouTube channel breaking down why, just at a very basic mathematical calculation, why duplication is almost always bad. I do think there is an interesting argument, and hearing this more and more on other podcasts like Theory of DFS and the High Stakes podcast. But I also think, you know, there is an argument to be made that a lineup that has almost, let's think about it almost from the implied duplication standpoint, right? So if we're taking every fighter, let's take every fighter's odds at being in the optimal lineup, right? Their raw probability of being in the optimal lineup. If the field was completely efficient, every single one of those fighters would be rostered at their rate of being in the optimal, right? And their ownership, their implied ownership projection, their optimal ownership projection would be exactly equal to their chance of showing up in the optimal lineup, right? Well, at a certain size contests, some of those lineups would be likely to be duplicated, right? There would almost be an implied dupe. So if you had, you know, let's say you have Google calculator here. You know, let's say you have six fighters that all have a 20% chance to be in the optimal lineup, right? So we have 0.2 to the six, right? And let's say you're playing a 100,000 person contest, right? Well, that lineup should actually theoretically, if the field was perfectly efficient, be duped 6.4% of the time, right? Well, if that lineup was actually in your calculation going to be duped 3% of the time, right? That lineup is actually, I haven't done like a deep analysis of this, and I don't know how true this is. So I might be wrong, but especially in a sport where it's very hard because of how many lineups are available to actually play uniques, I think that lineup is still a good one to play. And I think there's a good argument to be made that as you kind of go down this path, it's not necessarily that you should be eliminating lineups that have a chance of being duplicated, period, but you should be searching, looking for the lineups that have the highest overall, that the lineups where their implied dupe, their implied duplication is higher than what their actual duplication is going to be, right? I mean, let's take this example more extreme, right? If you could find a lineup that should, if the field was perfectly efficient, be duped 100 times, but based on the way that your ownership works out, it's only going to be duped 20% of the time, right? Or not 20% of the time. That would be a lot, right? If it should be duped 100 times and it's going to be 20 times based on your calculations, even though that 20 duplication is bad, right? That lineup's going to be in the optimal so often that should still be profitable for you to play. And I think as the field actually gets sharper, and I don't know if we're dealing with a particularly sharp field at the moment in the world of MMA DFS, to be completely honest, but as the field gets sharper and sharper, they're going to leave less kind of hanging unique lineups out there. And I think we should be a little bit more comfortable playing lineups that have a greater number of implied dupes than their actual dupes. And because fighters are independent and the ownership projections of individual fighters should be mostly independent from one another in MMA in particular, I think it's an interesting thought experiment to go down there. So like all of that to say, in my MMA process, I am not necessarily eliminating a lineup purely because I think it is likely to be duplicated. if I can find a lineup that has a higher than it's what it, a higher optimal rate than dupe rate, I guess would be a way of thinking about that. I'm willing to play that. So anyway, kind of ended with more of a theoretical angle there. Again, I in summary here, right? Simplest things that you can do here, especially if you're just getting started out, is add a little bit of value to those ownership projections, right? By just taking advantage of some of those field trends and letting that ownership fade slider work for you for a bit, because that's part of the reason it's on here. I think studying your exposures and lineups themselves, you know, a heuristic like having a under 20% owned fighter in every lineup or something like that, all that is doing is that is depressing that lineup's ownership product anyway. That is the impact of that. So that's really just a heuristic that's doing the same thing I was describing there. But I think also capping your exposure or lowering projection to some of the higher owned fighters and just naturally getting to some of those lower owned lineup constructions there. But my favorite way of doing this, if you wanted to get pretty analytical about it, is actually calculating out that ownership projection or ownership product for yourself and comparing lineups that way. So, Neil said, super excited about ownership product being added to the app. I brought it up in the past with NFL. It would be amazing to have for this season. Yeah, and I think, as I understand it, we're actually cooking up something a little bit more robust than that, both in terms of the different ways that you can study ownership amongst your lineups, but also ways that you can directly counteract duplication in the app. I won't go much further than that, but it is on our mind. Anytime we've got something that, you know, the SaberSim team here is going outside of the app to do, like this is a perfect example. It's generally, you know, if we come to some agreement as a team here, something that ends up on our roadmap to implement, because we want powerful tools in the SaberSim app. So, anyway, let's go ahead and keep it going. There was a good question from Mark here, on the product side. Next question here. He said, similar question. Show a group example of no lineups with certain combinations, like no lineups with these two or three fighters together. Thanks. Yeah. So I think, you know, if you want to, you can take advantage of the player groups here a bit to, you know, deal with ownership, right? One of those examples. So first of all, I should kind of explain what I'm doing here. So the player groups are in the rules tab in the build settings. So if you click rules, player groups, add a group rule. And I think you can get pretty creative with the way you want to do this, right? Maybe one way is to say, you know, let's use Neil's example and say that we want one fighter under 20% owned in every lineup, right? So if you click the first fighter, sort by lowest to highest ownership projection, click the first fighter and then shift click the last fighter you want in that list. You can grab all those fighters at once and make a big group and say at least one, right? And that would allow us to force that kind of construction in there. If you also, on top of that, maybe want to do no more than two fighters that are 20%, 30% owned, right? And again, these are just going to be heuristics in this case. This is going to vary a little bit here, slate to slate. But maybe you want to do something like that and say no more than two. Maybe no more than three? Yeah, I think maybe no more than three in that case. No more than two seems like a lot. And then build and take advantage of the player groups in that way, right? And this will help that as well. So I'm curious. Let's see what these lineups look like. This is something you'd probably want to play around with a little bit, probably want to vary slate to slate, right? 11 fight card, I think, is duplication is something that we want to think about for a card of this size, right? Last week we had 15, right? Think something like that. Less of an issue there. I heard on the Theory of DFS podcast that the winning lineup in the big GPP was actually the eighth optimal. So there were actually seven unplayed, and it was unique. So it was the eighth optimal on that slate. It was a unique lineup, and there were seven other higher scoring lineups that also were unplayed in that contest. But on an 11 fight card, I think it's probably a little more likely that the winning lineup is the optimal, and probably also a little bit more likely that the winning lineup is duped. But those player groups can be a pretty good tool there to just build some lineups with some lower chances of being duplicated. One thing to keep an eye on, you know, as always with these player groups, be careful that, you know, if there is sim variance, and using simulations will help ease this a little bit, but I think always be careful. You know, you never know if there might be an unintended consequence of setting a rule like that. And I would probably, if I was doing these rules, I would want to see, just like we have here, pretty flat exposures to all of these low owned fighters, right? I don't want, you know, you don't want a situation where you've set a rule at least one of these guys here at the bottom, and then you end up with like maybe 80% of one fighter or the other at this low end. So I would probably, if you're setting player rules, player group rules to do this kind of thing, study your exposures, spend a little bit of time on step three to make sure that you are balanced in the way that you want them to be. So anyway, good stuff. Getting me excited for MMA DFS this weekend. So, but all right, let's hit this question from Toasted Taters. Interesting discussion here that's gone on in Slack, as a thread to this question. So, recommend if you're interested in this, reading through that back and forth there. But the question said, if I set max exposures to each player based off my research build, those max exposures will work well for 150 max. But when I get down to single entry 3 max or 20 max, oftentimes I get an error message saying unable to meet those exposures. Just wondering how those max exposure settings may be impacting my smaller size contest. Are max exposure settings recommended for those contest sizes, or should I be more focused on adjusting player projections? Yeah, so, you know, as you have less lineups in a given contest, right, you are going to have less discrete options for whether or not you are rostering a player, right? If you're playing a single entry, every player in the pool, there's really only two options. You can have 100% exposure to that player, or you can have 0% exposure to that player. At a three max, there are four discrete options, right? You can have 0%, 33%, 66% repeating, of course, right? Or 100% exposure to those guys, and so on. If you're playing 150 lineups, you have a lot of discrete levels of where you can set those exposures. And playing 150 different lineups will generally play pretty nicely with doing something like having min and max exposures set for every single player in the pool. It increases your build time. It does put a little bit more requirements on the app to build those lineups, but generally you can get away with doing that. As you go down in your number of entries, I think you have to be willing to accept kind of bigger, wider windows or buckets of what you are willing to let your exposures be for certain players, purely because of the fact that there's less discrete options for where those exposures can be, but also less lineups to create different combinations of players to get everything where you want them to be. So I would say if you are the type that is using these different max exposures on a lot of different players in your pool and you want all of these exposures to be met, I think what you are probably best off doing is building the number of lineups to the maximum number of lineups you're playing in any contest. So if that's 150, then it's 150, and kind of letting that 150 lineup pool be your entire pool of lineups, and letting that lineup pool have all the right exposures you want it to be, but then using a unique random fill from that pool to fill all of your other contests. And while you won't be able to then guarantee that in any given 20 max or 3 max or even set of single entries from that set of lineups, that your exposures will match exactly what they will match in your broader pool of 150, right? For the reasons I've talked about already, that uniquely random selecting of lineups will kind of smooth that out over the long term. And I think in general, your pool of entire lineups you play will be generally pretty consistent across the board. I think that's the best practical way to do that. You could potentially, you know, if you're a Saber Sim truther, or not a Saber Sim truther, a Saber Score truther, right? You are going to potentially sacrifice a little bit of EV there, because, you know, you might not be doubling down on your highest Saber Score lineups. Let me think about the right way to say this. You may arbitrarily be putting your 47th best lineup instead of your first best lineup into your highest dollar single entry, for example. But what you gain by giving up that Saber Score edge is a more flatter and homogenous set of exposures that matches what you're trying to do. So hopefully that is clear. I think probably for Toasted Taters who asked this question, that's probably clear. That kind of summarizes a lot of what was the discussion in Slack as well. If I lost anybody else there, I apologize because I think this question is definitely a very specific example to a specific use case here in the app. But yeah, anyway, good question there. And let's move on here to our next question. One came in from Don here. And this question comes in fairly often here. He said, I've noticed I've been cashing in GPP MLB tournaments along with several other SaberSim users, so I've had to split the winnings with them. Can you recommend a strategy that will differentiate me from others? And so this is a good question. And I will preface this by saying the same thing I always do pretty much when this question comes in. I think that your efforts to avoid duplication are best thought of as like broadly avoiding duplication rather than trying to specifically avoid duping with other SaberSim users, right? I think in general, the idea that you need to differentiate from other SaberSim users specifically is kind of a trap that isn't as helpful as thinking, oh, I need to avoid duplication more broadly speaking. And the reason for that, right, is because of the sim variance slider on its own is generally going to do a pretty good job of avoiding duplication amongst the SaberSim community at large, right? Because we have thousands of simulations for each game on the slate, right? And we are bucketing these simulations randomly. And the higher this sim variance slider is, right, the fewer number of sims that are going into each lineup, the more your uniqueness, the more your diversity is going to increase. And I think the sim variance slider alone does a very, very, very good job of avoiding that, except in contests where there are so few optimal lineup constructions anyway that you need to avoid duplication broadly, right? So I think maybe this is a bit of a technicality, but I would say don't focus on trying to avoid duplication with other SaberSim users. If you are duping other SaberSim users, it's probably more that you're just duping other players, right? Duplication is a concern in that particular game type. Now, in terms of how to avoid duplication, it is going to depend a little bit sport to sport, right? We just spent 15 minutes or so at the start of this stream talking about ownership in MMA and how to avoid duplication in MMA. I think another sport type where this can definitely be a concern is showdown. So these playoff slates, right, for NBA, for example, especially, you know, with these very big contests in a sport that is not very event-based. And I think there is a smaller pool of optimal lineups from which you can really pick from, I think is something that we want to think about. We want to think about duplication in NBA Showdown. So a couple things that I like to do. First of all, this max salary is going to help you out with that. NBA actual scores are very well correlated to salaries. I think hand builders and traditional optimizers are very overwhelmingly going to overrate the value of max salary builds in NBA Showdown. I think lowering your max salary a bit can be a big help there. But my favorite way to avoid duplication in NBA Showdown in particular is to vary your lineup construction, right? To play a lineup construction that the field, for one reason or another, is unlikely to play. And I think there's a couple ways to do this. One is to play an unlikely game script, right? People get attached to the perceived way that a game is going to play out, right? And typically, I think that follows Vegas totals. So if we take a game, if the Warriors, I don't know what the Warriors are favored by. It looks like on SaberSim here, favored by 7.5, at least with SaberSim. I imagine the line is somewhere like that here at Vegas as well. Play a construction that is overweight on Grizzlies, right? Force stacking constructions that are overweight on the Grizzly side. Right. And you are naturally going to differentiate yourself. The reason this works so well with SaberSim is because all of these lineups are already optimals for a game simulation, right? You don't need to vet, can a 4-stack or a 5-stack of the Grizzlies pay off on tonight's slate? Because SaberSim is telling you that, yeah, it absolutely can. In even just the first 500 best lineups we could make here, we can build 20 from the first 42 that are overweight on Grizzlies. And the field almost always overvalues what the mean projection of the implied Vegas totals implies about the way that the game is going to play out without thinking about the pure context of the game, right? Or the pure actual range of outcomes of the way that the game could play out, right? I think another way that you can get really unique playing on NBA Showdown is to vary your captain positions. And we're actually getting a pretty diverse set of captains here automatically. But captain being the 1x, 1.5x multiplier position, it is, I think, the highest leverage spot in the lineup to do something unique. And fade the field, right? We're already fading Curry at captain relative to the ownership, but maybe we cross him off and say that, you know, yes, there are probably a lot of Stephen Curry captain lineups that are positive EV and are likely to be optimal, but with how many different lineups we can make in this particular game, why not play the ones where we're using somebody else, right? So now we've got this set of lineups. We've got 20 lineups here where we faded the most popular captain, and we're playing lineup constructions that basically take the other side of the game, that are playing, you know, a situation where it's four or five Grizzlies plus one or two Warriors, right? We could even probably get a little more extreme and say that we want to insist on playing a Grizzlies captain too. And now we've differentiated even further. So that's those are some of my favorite ways in NBA Showdown. I use a lot of the similar strategies for things like NFL Showdown. I guess all showdowns, really. I like to kind of think about it this way. But that's some of my favorite ways to avoid duplication there. Don says, I think that I get it. Good. I hope I didn't feel like I was, I don't know, beating a dead horse there at all. But I think, and you're going to see, I think, you know, if you're getting duped, you're going to see some SaberSim logos probably there with you. Because, you know, especially, you know, if that person's using a similar set of projections, et cetera, it's going to happen. But I think in general, when you are seeing that you're getting duplicated, period, right? Then worry about avoiding duplication. I think the main point I was trying to make here is that avoiding how to dupe other SaberSim users is a bit of a trap. And I don't think that's, your time is not best spent thinking about it through that angle. Think about duplication, period, amongst the field. So, cool. All right, let's see here. Let's catch up on the YouTube chat here. Guy Will Gamble said, I'm losing hard on big slates, but it feels better. Yeah, I feel that. I mean, it is nice on like a 13-game slate, you know, unless you're playing the massive massive contests. You don't always need the nuts to take something down, just because there's a lot of different ways to get there. But it, you can also really be very wrong too. Cool. What else we got here? Mike Ganistan said, how do you feel about New York and LA tonight? I'm playing my first $25 tourney and want to make sure I'm not putting out something trash. You could answer after you're done looking at NBA. I have no idea, to be honest. Honestly, here's what I'd recommend doing. You know, a lot of times, you know, one of the problems with slate picks basically is that they don't really take into account the contest, right? You know, you may hear, hey, you know, some guy might be saying, I love the Yankees or I love the White Sox, right? But or I love the Angels, right? But that doesn't really take into account, you know, there's a difference of the strategy you would want to use, what kind of players, what kind of constructions you would want to use if you were playing a 500 person single entry or a large field GPP, right? So what I would actually recommend doing, and I see Mike Ganistan here says playing on FanDuel. So we're popping to FanDuel. What I would actually end up recommending here is building some lineups and seeing, are you getting the kinds of stacks and constructions and teams and pitchers that's in line with how you wanted to attack the slate, right? So if you're playing a single entry, $25 on FanDuel sounds like a single entry to me, right? Come in here, set the settings to what contest you're playing, right? So the GPP single entry, I think that $25 is 500 people or so, right? We'll assume that it is. Set that entrance there and build some lineups for yourself, right? You can even say, I want to look at, you know, the first 20 lineups, right? And see what these look like, right? Because I could come up here and tell you, yeah, I'm playing some Yankees, or I could tell you I'm playing some Angels, but I actually don't think that's as helpful as it sounds, unless you just want my reassurance. But let's see what these lineups look like here, and we'll see. But I think the Yankees probably be pretty popular. So this one 329 entries. So yeah, let's see what we get, right? baseball in particular, you can almost play whoever you want. Like, I'm not even kidding. I know that's I know people say that a lot, but let's see what we're getting. Okay, so Coors gonna be popular, right? A lot of Kansas City popping here right off the bat, but we see some Yankees, right? We're getting to some Yankee stacks. Let's take a look at our team stacks, right? First 20 lineups, we have some Yankee stacks popping up here. Definitely some viability there. We can even expand the pool, right? Let's see what the first 250 lineups we built here look like, right? So Yankees, the most popular stack actually out of the first 250. So definitely a fan of the Yankee stacks. LA, a little bit less popping up here, right? Doesn't mean you can't play them. Doesn't mean no way to play them, right? But maybe not as popular of a stack, right? Not as efficient of a stack here. Only a couple lineups that are popping up with the Angels. Funny enough, they're paired with the Yankee stack. So maybe you get away with a lineup like this. But said for pitching, I'm liking Gausman and Lyles. Yeah, so one of my favorite ways to do this here is to, if you're playing a single bullet, right, to kind of apply, trying to think about the way to say this, figure out how you want to tackle the slate and then see what you can get to with the initial set of lineups that Saberson built you, right? Saberson is building you 500 lineups, basically saying like, these are 500 viable lineups for the contest. There's only 329 people even playing the contest, right? So I feel like you could probably be pretty confident that, you know, the best lineups that you can play, the most positive EV lineups that you can play, there's probably a lot of positive EV lineups in this pool of 500, right? So let's start doing this here. So let's say we want to play a Yankee stack. So let's find a Yankee stack and set the minimum exposure to 100. So now we're guaranteeing we're playing a Yankee stack, right? And let's also, you said you like Gausman. Let's pair that with Gausman. So let's say we want a Yankee stack and we want Gausman, right? And you can actually kind of, oh, okay. Well, right off the bat here, we don't have a Gausman and Yankee stack together. So maybe we go a different direction, right? You said Lyles too. Let's take a look and see if Lyles pops up on FanDuel. I think that these cheaper pitchers don't always pop up as efficiently. So the reason I'm saying we can't pair these two, right? Let me move this aside. Let me move a few things aside. We can pair them, right? If you want to build that lineup construction, you can. But Saberson's telling you there isn't a lineup that does this in your first 500, right? Which I think for a single entry is generally a pretty good indication that maybe you might want to think about going another direction, right? So maybe instead, maybe we sacrifice on the pitchers and maybe we play Scherzer, right? Which seems like a popular play here. And we make some adjustments here somewhere else, right? Maybe we, you know, continue making some other changes here elsewhere. Or let's take this a different way. Let's say, you know, let's say we're willing to sacrifice that Yankee stack. And instead we've decided that we want to play Gausman, right? So let's lock in Gausman, right? Well, Gausman, we immediately have to jump to the 120th best lineup. So Saberson there is kind of telling us, yeah, I mean, you know, probably preferred to play the Yankee stack than the Gausman lineup, right? But maybe we want to play with him. And let's see, maybe can we get, I don't know. Maybe can we get, trying to think about another way to take this. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we look through the top 20 Gausman lineups, right? And kind of look and see what the different constructions look like here. So a couple different ways to play. I guess kind of the process that I'm referring to here, one of my favorite ways, if you're playing a single bullet and you want to figure out is the way that I want to tackle this slate viable or optimal, is build yourself a big pool of lineups, right? And explore them, right? Can I, in the first 500 lineups Saberson recommends playing on this slate, can I pair Gausman and the Yankee stacks together? Can I pair the Angels, Yankees, and Gausman together, right? Where do I have to make some sacrifices? Where does Saberson recommend making sacrifices first, right? Clearly those Yankee stack looks pretty good, but clearly a preference to playing probably Scherzer and Cole over Gausman in this particular case. So, And then follow-up question. I was wondering why my screen looks different. I'm on mobile. It's not as clean as using a PC. Is there an app for mobile? We recently put a lot of work in last fall to optimize the app for the mobile experience. We don't have a mobile app. The browser app is intended to be fully mobile optimized. It's not always going to be perfect. I think you can just do a lot more. You can kind of get a lot more done quickly on a desktop, on a computer, if you have access to it. But you should, in general, still be able to do everything functionally that you can do on the desktop version, on the mobile version. So if you have any questions about anything I'm doing here on desktop, about how to do it on mobile, let me know. I'd be happy to help. But and if there's anything specifically that you find difficult to use on mobile, let us know, because we put a lot of work in last fall there to try to get that as tightened up as possible. So, but Aaron said, not a fan on single entries on these big slates. It's tough. I think it's tough. But yeah, I've mentioned it before. I'm a multi-entry type at heart. I think about things as exposures and as a portfolio. So it's hard for me to go into single entry mode as well. But anyway, so I guess, you know, kind of summing it up, since we did a little bit of analysis here, for that kind of contest, I like those Yankee stacks. Not sure I'm as on board with the Angel stacks. And I think I probably, in a smaller field single entry, prefer just getting to Scherzer, because I think he projects as far and away the best pitcher, at least at the moment on the slate. I think it's pretty easy to get there. But that's not something that I'm coming up with on my own in a way that you can't recreate for yourself, right? I arrived at those conclusions just by building some lineups and seeing what is possible on the slate. And that's how I'd recommend doing it for yourself, is build lineups and just see what's playable, what's out there. So, cool. All right. What other questions do we have here for me today? We'll have to wrap up here right at the top of the hour. Have a little bit more time here before we go. But any other questions here as we head into the weekend? Looking forward to good weekend of DFS here. Excited for this MMA card now that we've talked about it a little bit. I've been enjoying NASCAR quite a bit. So excited to play another NASCAR race. And looking forward to this 13-game slate. The beauty of this, too, is that it seems like there is not really any weather concerns, not at least any significant ones. I think I was looking at Roth's dashboard before we popped on. It seems like the St. Louis game is the only game that has like any even hint of weather. But probably, you know what would be the most Friday the 13th thing ever would be this game getting postponed for like just a couple drops of rain or something. But I won't jinx it. Or maybe I have. Maybe I already have. Fade it. You heard it here first. Fade the game. No, I'm just kidding. If you guys are actually seriously listening along here, don't blindly fade this game. It doesn't appear that there are significant weather concerns for this game. Anyway, I better shut up, right? HC said, is SaberScore your preferred pick for MLB lineups? Absolutely. I talked about that a lot yesterday on stream. So if you missed it, it was, I think, the way we first kicked it off. So you can go check that out. But SaberScore, the value of that is, for baseball in particular, most importantly, is that it's going to pick up on correlation. So you're going to get those big stacks. The lineups at the top of the SaberScore rankings are going to have the best stacks to play overall. I highly, highly recommend using SaberScore as opposed to projected score for baseball in particular. So, Guy Will Gamble said, can you show a little bit more about viable ways to get variation in your MLB lineup pool? Yeah, honestly, I think my favorite way above all here, above all else, is to up that sim variance slider. Right. If you're finding that you're not getting the diversity that you want in your pool, I think it sounds simple, but like what's going on behind the scenes is pretty sophisticated there. And I think that is the first thing I always recommend doing is bumping up that variance slider a little bit. The reason why that's just so nice is the way it does that is just by looking at a smaller set of sims, right? It's going to very naturally diversify you, but it's also going to do so in a way that maintains or increases the upside of those lineups. So if on your default build, you're not getting a lot of diversity there, I love the idea of increasing your sim variance slider. From there, let's run a build here. So this is like two or three notches higher than the default value for the 20 max. I think you can diversify pretty well by just adjusting these min and max exposures. And everybody's going to have their own personal risk tolerance here of where you want to go to that. But, you know, a lot of times 20 max kind of field, I like probably having a max exposure on my hitters of about 40, 50%, depending on the slate. In 150, a lot of times I'm closer to like 30% max exposure to my batters. Let's see what we get here out of this. This is so cursed. SaberSim's in love with giant stacks too. that's hilarious. Anyway, yeah, so now I might come in behind this, right? We get a little bit more natural diversity automatically, but then come in behind this with like reducing some of our exposure to some of these highest exposed batters, right? And this is kind of a very natural way to help diversify that pool a little bit more. So, pitching is always interesting. A lot of times I'm a little bit more comfortable having more exposure to pitchers, especially in 20 lineups. So I might, especially if we're expecting 50% max Scherzer, I might be okay getting leverage on him there by playing 90%. But if you wanted to bring this down a little bit too, maybe you bring that down to 60% here. So, Guy Will Gamble said, I've been building with default sliders and setting a cap by team dependent on the number of teams on the slate. Finds it keeps me from getting overexposed to certain teams. Yeah, I think that's a good approach. I think that works. There's not really a wrong way to do it here for baseball in particular. You'll find that your pool of lineups is often very, very diverse. So I really, you know, in NBA, if your goal was to just maximize diversity, you're still going to find there's going to be those slates where you're getting just a ton of exposure to the best plays on the slate. But in baseball, just because of how similar the ranges of outcomes are between even good projected hitters and bad projected hitters, there's a ton of diversity, right? In our pool of 500, our most exposed batter is Aaron Judge, 14.8%, right? You can basically play even in just this pool of 500, virtually anybody you want very easily. So I have no problems making adjustments to those exposures, team stack exposures, individual players exposures, whatever you want to do until you're satisfied with that level of risk. So, but good question. All right. I think I am going to go ahead and cap us off there for the week. Thank you to everybody that tuned in today, watched the stream, participated here. A big thank you to everybody that watches this show after it goes up on YouTube and also on all of our podcast outlets as well. If you haven't tried out SaberSim before, we have a free 7-day trial, sabersim.com. You can come check us out. Best time, as always, to sign up for a free trial is these ends of the week, because you get the opportunity to play the MMA card, NASCAR, all the other things going on over the weekend. Of course, baseball and basketball and these other sports going on. But we have full sim support for all of these different sports. Come check us out. If by chance you stumbled upon this show here and you have subscribed to SaberSim in the past, we reset everybody's trial at the start of baseball season. So you can come check us out for a new 7 days. Yeah, that's it, I guess. So good luck on the slate tonight here. Happy Friday. Have a good weekend. I will be right back on Monday of next week at 2 p.m. Eastern. Until then, take care and good luck. See ya.